This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County and Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, 89.1 in DeKalb Sycamore, 89.3 in Morris Joliet, covering much of central Illinois and northern Illinois, and still growing. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn. Remember, we are brought to you by you and couldn't do the show without you. And, of course, we couldn't run the station without you and bring you all of the programming from EWTN. So any donations that you can make are always appreciated. If you'd like to make a donation, the best way to do it is go to our website, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. It will tell you how to make a donation, and large or small, we're always grateful. And there are other things on our website, more information about ourselves, and you'll learn some things there. If you do want to make a phone call, our number is 309-807-2427. Again, that's 309-807-2427, and you can make a call to us there. As I said, I'm here with my wife, Lynn. And before we start on our show, last week we talked a little bit about critical theory. I shouldn't say a little bit. I read from an article that was quite long, and I thought maybe it wasn't as clear as could be and maybe a little bit dry. And so I thought we'd talk a little bit more about that. And also I mentioned that we were going to talk about the law and how the law is based on some of the things we talked about last week. We talked about universals. Those concepts apply everywhere and for all peoples and all things for all time, and how that is being overturned by modernism. So I want to give a few personal examples about that and show how that can show up in our world and change how we behave and how our law applies to things, and it can be very, very important. And so we'll do that. Before we start, I'll turn this over to my wife and see what she has to say before we get into what we're going to talk about today.
Hi out there. It's good to be back with you again today. Big coronation over in England. Very interesting to watch. I haven't been able to see much of it yet, but we've recorded it. I'm really into watching, seeing what's going on. The pageantry, I love it. Other than that, it's springtime. Could use a little bit more rain and pray for peace.
That's for sure. And as far as the rain goes, you are right. Our garden is getting a little bit dry. And happens there have been quite a few. There was really a big pileup car crash down on 55 south of Springfield, I think. Wasn't there because of a dust storm down there?
60, 70 vehicles involved, and seven have died. 38 went to the hospital.
And you could see on television the dust that was so thick. That's the problem on the interstate driving is if conditions get bad, whether by rain or fog or whatever it happens to be, in this case, dust so thick that you really couldn't see. The danger always is that you slow down and drive according to conditions, but people coming up behind you, there's always people that think that they can drive on the interstate at the interstate speed limit, or of course, quite a few miles beyond that, regardless of the conditions. And when that happens, there's not a lot you can do. Somebody's come up behind you, and they smash into you. There's not a lot you can do about it, and it's a bad, bad situation. So we pray for all those people.
First car, I believe it was. There were two of them. They could not identify him for much of the week. They finally did.
Yeah, it's a shame that that happens. I mean, so for all people listening out there, if you see bad conditions change when you're driving on the interstate, slow down, you know, and be careful and watch what's coming up ahead. And again, I guess you have to also be careful of watching in your mirror. But these poor people in that dust storm, they probably couldn't see in front of them, and they couldn't see behind them either. By the time you can see anybody coming up on you, it's too late. So
It happened so fast.
And as far as the dust goes, the last few days here, it's warmed up enough to open the windows, you know, and not have the air conditioning on yet. And that's how we operated anyway. But you could tell that there was dust coming in, wasn't there, Lynn?
Oh.
You didn't really see it.
It reminded me of being out in New Mexico or Arizona where my daughter lives. And you have the windows open out there. It's nice, but boy, the dust, it's just constant, the sand and the dust. And that kind of reminded me of what was going on this week here with all the every time I turned around, I think it looks so dirty. You could see the dust in the air, the dirt blowing.
Well, at any rate, last week we were talking about critical theory. And, I happened to be talking right after that, before actually our show came on, with a personal friend of mine. We were just talking about the fact that our modern society has abandoned the Aristotelian philosophy that the church used to go by. And that philosophy is the idea that there are commonalities, that is, essentials that we can refer to, called universals, you know, classifications and so forth of things, such as triangularity would be one, friendship would be another example, things that don't exist materially in the real world, in a sense of the material world, and that exist in our minds. But Aristotle, the philosopher, could show that these things didn't exist only in the mind, that the whole human race, for example, could go out of existence, and something like triangularity, for example, this, you know, that you don't find in the real world. You find triangles in the real world, but you don't find triangularity, and you don't find the formula that the square of the hypotenuse of a right triangle is equal to the squares, the sum of the squares of the two sides, and that occurs in every single triangle, every single right triangle, that is, large or small. And something like that is a concept that human beings can abstract out of triangles, and it is something that is not simply made up by the mind. It's real, because you can't change it. You can't declare that you're going to have the rule change to something else. I mean, every triangle exhibits the same thing. It's something that can be discovered. And if the human race went out of existence, it would still exist for someone else of intelligence to discover. It's not something we make up. And so if it doesn't exist in the material world, and of course our minds are not material, our brains may be, but our minds are not, then it has to exist somewhere. So Plato said, well, there's the material world that we live in, and then there's the world of our mind, things that we can make up in our mind. And he said, then there must be a third realm, a third world, and that's where triangularity exists. And Aristotle took it further and said, you know, I won't go into it all, but said that this exists in the mind of God. Well, modernity overthrew the Aristotelian concept of the Catholic Church that the church relied on, and the sort of has discounted that there are such things as universals in a real, you know, in some kind of a third world, that it is something we just make up with our minds. They really can't explain this, but that's, you know, they have abandoned Aristotle. At any rate, in talking with this friend, he was saying, well, that's all too complicated. People, you know, are confused by it. You're better off to convert people over to Christianity simply through understanding and kindness. And he related to me the story of this lesbian woman who looked upon Christians who teach that homosexuality is wrong as her enemy. And this woman confronted a number of Christians, and she began to realize these people were not her enemies. They didn't hate her or dislike her. They treated her with respect and courtesy and kindness. And over time, she was converted over to Christianity and saw these people as their friends. And of course, you know, that is a good thing. And that's how the church in early times, the early Christian church, operated. And that's why Christianity sort of overtook the world, like wildfire. I mean, more and more people in a pagan world were converted by the idea that, you know, they were being treated fairly, they were treated justly, they were being treated kindly, women were being treated equally to men, And the Christianity demonstrated by example is goodness. And so it went a long way in converting people over to Christianity. And this is something, you know, that perhaps we should do more of today, this kindness. And we don't really need to be focusing on all this philosophy. But the thing is I understood, you know, what he was talking about, and I can understand that some people don't want to deal with an article like I read last week, and they don't maybe understand that concept, you know, that things could change simply because philosophy changed. So I want to give an example, in a little bit today on how the philosophy has changed things. The problem today is that under modernism, you know, under this critical theory, our universities are teaching this to their students, this critical theory that we talked about last week, that there is no such thing as commonalities, that our law is simply made up by human beings. It doesn't really refer to anything higher or more divine, and that things such as triangularity and friendship and so forth, things that actually Aristotle talked about, are really not real. They're simply made up in our minds. And this isn't just being taught in the universities anymore. It spread down in not long ago to our secondary schools, and now it is being taught in our grade schools. So the point I'm trying to make here is that Christianity is 2,000 years old. Back when it first came into existence in a pagan world, it was brand new, and the whole idea that all people had worth and that all people had a common humanity and were to be treated, you know, as being made in the image of God and being treated with respect and so forth, all that was brand new, and it caught on rather rapidly in a world like that. But in our world, it's been taken for granted so long, and now with this critical theory being taught, our kids at a very early age are being inoculated against that idea. They're being told, for example, that such things as friendship and kindness and other aspects of Christianity are simply concepts that are made up by the ruling culture in order to have power over everybody else, especially having power over people who have been marginalized for a long time, people such as homosexuals, lesbians, and the whole concept of marriage, for example, has been defined by the people in power and made up by the people in power. And there's no such thing as natural law. There's no such thing as a natural marriage. All of these things have simply been made up. And so even though this is something that Christianity did, you know, the idea of St. Paul himself saying that love is more important than reason in these instances. And in his day, it certainly was. But in our day, this aspect of Christianity is being watered down because of what our kids are being taught in school. In other words, they look at this with suspicion. At one time, they would be glad to be open to friendship and other things. Now they're being taught that all these things are just made up by our culture. They don't really exist in the real world. It's sneered at as essentialism. In other words, this is something called essentialism, and that it is just being made up as a means of putting people and other things into classes and classifications, and it's being done by the culture that happens to be in charge, and that culture does it simply to perpetuate itself and to keep everybody else in line. And that these things don't really exist. They're just a trick, in a sense, of linguistics. It's just that human beings have language, and they use that language to make up reality. And reality is just a construct, and it's not anything real. In other words, whatever the real world is out there, we sort of modify it by our language to fit our own particular interests. And dominant culture protects those interests by doing so, and it marginalizes a lot of people and treats them as lesser human beings because of it. And so everyone has a right to live their own particular individual life. Everybody has their own reality, and they don't have to live according to the reality that the culture enforces on them. And they have every right to develop their own ideas of reality and their own ideas of all of the things that we classify as friendship and marriage and so on. And they don't have to listen to the authorities on that. They're their own authority. And that's what kids are learning in school. And so they're sort of inoculated against it, of the idea of winning them over by kindness and love and so forth is being just a trick. And so this is, you know, what is happening. And why is it happening? People are saying, well, why is this happening? Why is this going on now? What, you know, but the whole point I'm making is that it's going on because when during the Enlightenment, mostly during the 18th century, we changed our philosophical thinking, abandoning the Aristotelian philosophy in which we could classify commonalities, we could classify things as marriage and so forth as being natural and existing, you know, these concepts existing in reality, not just as something we make up with our minds, but something that we can use as a star to guide our behavior by and our law by. This all was rejected. And by the early 20th century, by the early 1900s, our laws in our Supreme Court justices and so forth coming out of our universities rejected the whole idea of these universals that are real, even though they don't exist in the material world, and said that, you know, for law, for example, is simply things that human beings make up and for their own convenience, and that these things don't exist in the real world. And they changed the whole concept of our law. And in the next segment here coming up, I'll give an example of how that idea adopted in the universities and through the Supreme Court has worked its way down into our culture generally and especially into our law and the negative effects it's having on all of our institutions. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnson on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Help seniors remain independent. Faith in Action is a nonprofit providing transportation for people over 60 to medical appointments and grocery stores. Become a Faith in Action driver in the extended Bloomington Normal area, 309-827-7780.
Catholic Spirit Radio would like to recognize our matching donors for this year's successful Carathon. David Busson, John Carter of Jack Lewis Jewelers, Matt and Layla Busson, John P. Holt Builders, and two anonymous donors. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio. Catholic Spirit Radio is hosting another outdoor rosary event, and you're invited. On Wednesday, May 31st, the Feast of the Visitation, we will gather in the north parking lot of 108 Boykins Place in Normal. Popcorn and treats, tours of the station and fellowship begin at 7 p.m. The Joyful Mysteries at 7:30, plus after the Rosary, an hour movie called Oceans of Mercy. Bring your family, friends, and lawn chairs on May 31st for an enjoyable evening of the Rosary, a movie, treats, and a special drawing.
Wondering about your next step? Ashley was in school and pregnant when she reached out to the Pregnancy Resource Center. Would she be judged? Would she be accepted? What she found at LAPRC was a team of people who were committed to providing excellent care and compassionate support to those facing pregnancy decisions through authentic relationships that display grace, honor life, and foster community. If you or someone you know is in a situation like Ashley, or if you want to help support women and families in our community, you can find us at pregnancyresourcecenter.org.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we've been talking more about this critical theory and this abandonment of the Aristotelian philosophy, in which there is the idea that there are commonalities, essentials, and so forth that we can abstract out of the world, and that these things are real, and that they actually exist outside of our minds, and our law and our culture, and especially Catholicism, was built and incorporated on this idea that there are certain commonalities that all human beings can agree to and can understand that exist in a real world. And when we abandon that philosophy in our universities, this idea that there isn't any higher law or anything outside of the realm of the so-called material world, that our science and our law and our society in general, our government, has to be based on what the modernism has defined as reality, that is the real material world. And so we have to understand that all of the things that we call natural law, the things that we take for granted, are just made up by human beings. And the dominant culture always makes up these things to serve itself and to keep itself in power, and that a lot of people are marginalized by these things, and they're entitled to interpret things differently. And I point out our kids are being taught that. I want to give an example here of what happens when that kind of thinking and that kind of belief is adopted by our universities and then passed on into the products of those universities, especially our justices that go on to become members of the, you know, Supreme Court, and how it affects their thinking and how it affects actually what happens to our society. So I'm going to read from an article that's printed here in the Catholic Register. And the article was written in back in March, but it's still very current. And it is concerns a definition, the definition of marriage by the Supreme Court. And it concerns how parenthood, the whole idea of parenthood, is affected by that definition of marriage, and how a particular case is pending and going to the court, and how it might go, and how it might destroy the whole idea of fatherhood, motherhood, and parenthood. And so I'll read from it, and I think it'll be a good example of how the abandonment of this idea of commonality and universals in our philosophy departments and universities has passed on down to in our society, and where all of these disturbing behaviors and teachings are coming from and how it's affecting our children.
Right, and I think if you pay real attention now to this article, it will really clarify what he's been trying to talk about.
Exactly. It's entitled Obergefell's Legacy, Redefining Marriage Redefines Parenthood. And again, it's in the Catholic Register. It says, Obergefell versus Hodges was wrongly decided. This case proves it. I was pretty sure I knew what I was going to find when I clicked on this screaming headline from NBC News, and the headline reads, A lesbian lost her son to his sperm donor. Should other gay parents be concerned? The sperm donor is the child's father. The lesbian is not related to her son, either through biology or adoption. And her son is, of course, put in quotes, meaning that it's really, according to standard Catholic teaching and our standard law as it used to be, is really not her son. The son is the biological product of its mother and the sperm donor, who is the father. It goes on, she feels cheated, that is this lesbian lady. We are supposed to feel sorry for her because the court gave custody of the child to his biological parents. What happened was is that these two lesbian women wanted to raise a child. And so one of the women, who was considered the, quote, wife, and had sex with a man, I assume they had sex because it says she was not artificially impregnated with the sperm donor's sperm. I assume that means she had sex with a man. And she became pregnant and bore a son from that man, and so that the two lesbian ladies could have a child to raise. And it says this is exactly the type of case that shows how wrongheaded the Supreme Court's Obergefell versus Hodges decision really is. It goes on. She says, I was deeply involved in the marriage debate prior to 2015 when the U.S. Supreme Court redefined marriage from the union of a man and a woman to a union of any two persons. Custody disputes between the same-sex couples were coming up actually before that decision. I found it extremely frustrating that even the dissent from Obergefell showed no interest whatsoever in the damage to children's relationship with their biological parents. In other words, people didn't see that this idea by the Supreme Court of somehow or another making the marriage laws non-discriminatory so that they didn't discriminate against people who were not two of the opposite sex. that anybody could have the privilege that the state grants of being marriage. Of course, the church would have taught that the state doesn't grant any such thing, and the church still teaches that, that marriage is an institution created by God and by, you know, the through nature and through God's control of nature. And that we can see this by just looking at the world for thousands and thousands of years. It was assumed and by people that marriage is something real. It isn't something that is just as made up by people making up the law, that two human beings, a male and a female, come together and have children. Those children belong to the biological parents, and those parents raise the children. That creates a family, and that family makes up society. And this has been true all over the whole world for thousands and thousands of years. And this was overturned by the modernist philosophy that denies that there's any such thing higher than the laws that human beings make up themselves. And overturning it by somehow or another, the idea that all people should be entitled to marriage actually destroys the whole concept of family and parenthood, as we shall see as we go along in this article. It says, the crucial issues show up in the NBC News report on this recent situation. And it says, quote, Chris Williams and Rebecca Wilson were legally married in June 2019 before Wilson gave birth to a boy that August, according to court documents. Shortly after the couple separated in November 2021, Wilson moved in with the child's sperm donor, taking the boy with her and prompting Williams to petition for custody. In other words, the so-called wife of this other woman moved in with the real father, what we would call the real father, of her son. And so they are a couple, a mother and a father, living together in marriage now. In other words, as far as the woman writing the article here says, they were trying to do the right thing. If Williams were a man, but according to the other woman, the so-called husband of this wife, this other lesbian woman, she says, if Williams were a man, the modernists say, if Williams were a man, there would have been a presumption of paternity under Oklahoma state law, which says a man is presumed to be the father of a child if he and the mother of the child are married to each other and the child is born during marriage. And that Oklahoma law, of course, is based on the old idea of marriage, that it is between a man and a woman, and a child is the biological product of that man and a woman and belongs to that man and that woman.
Because they are a family.
Right. But the new law is saying that anyone can be married, and so this woman, the lesbian woman who presumes to be the husband, is actually the father of the child, and this is what the modernists are saying, according to the new law. So Oklahoma's law reads that the father is entitled to maternity rights. And so they're saying that under the new law, that the woman, the lesbian woman who claims to be the husband, is therefore legally the father of the child. And that the real father of the child, that we would say, the Catholic Church would say, is not the father by law. And so therefore, that father shouldn't have any paternity rights over the child. The paternity rights should go to the lesbian woman. This is how crazy things have become, simply by making marriage available to same-sex couples. You can see here what's happened. It suddenly has changed the whole presumption of thousands of years of tradition and the biology and the understanding that children are the biological products of a man and a woman, coming together in marriage. And that's all being overturned simply because five justices of our Supreme Court have ruled that somehow it's wrong to discriminate against people who, are of the same sex who want to have the so-called institution of marriage. The church is clear on this. Marriage is not an institution created by our law. It's not an institution created by man. It's an institution created by God, that it would exist in any society similar to ours, even if all human beings went out of existence, if there were other creatures similar to us and operated on the same biological basis as us, they would discover this marriage in the same way we have discovered it. It isn't something we made up. It's something that occurs in the real world. We can see it not only among our own ourselves, but we can see it among all the higher mammals. And of course, you would get an argument from modernists that there is no such thing as a mammal. That would be considered a commonality that is made up by human beings also, that everything in this world is different from everything else, that in effect, all trees are not trees. That's a classification, for example, even to call such things as trees, when every single tree is different from every other tree, it's just something that we make up. And so they would insist that marriage is just something that human beings make up, and its definition can be changed to whatever we want, and it has been changed by the Supreme Court, because when they made marriage available to same-sex couples, then a woman becomes the father of the child, even though that child is not a product of her biologically. That's what's going on here.
And it's taking humanity away out of people. You're no longer human. You are a thing.
Exactly. And the fact is that if you look at what's being taught in our schools today and our universities and passed on down to our secondary schools and high schools by the very people coming out of the universities that go on to those schools, that is exactly being taught, that there is no such thing as a common humanity. All people are different from each other. There are really no commonalities among people. There is no such thing as the imago, the image of God, the imago Dei. It doesn't exist. It's something that human beings make up. It's not real. And, of course, there's the denial of God. And when you deny God, you deny universals. You deny that there's any third realm at all, that concepts such as triangularity and so forth are just things that we make up with our minds. They're all human. In effect, you replace God, with human. You make men gods. And that's exactly what Aristotle said. He said that if you reject universals, he said you reject God, and you reject even being able to speak clearly, you make yourself either a god or a beast. And so we know that human beings are not gods. And when you try to make yourself a god, as Aristotle said, you lower yourself to the level even lower than beasts. And he pretty much said, if you want to reject universals, then you might as well shut up and grunt. And actually, today you see some of that, don't you, Lynn, on television?
Oh, God.
You see some of these people that are protesting against the common understanding of law and so forth, simply screaming into a microphone, screaming their rage and so forth. And that's exactly what Aristotle said, that if you lose these concepts, you lose even the ability to think and speak coherently.
Right. And a little bit later, we'll address how it's really affecting us today.
Exactly. Anyhow, this is what's going on. The modernists, the so-called progressives, the so-called people, the champions of same-sex marriage, are taking this case to court and charging that under Oklahoma law, that this lesbian woman should be regarded as the legal father of the child. And that the legality should be taken away from the actual physical father of the child, even though that father and mother are living together in what used to be a regular marriage. And this is a perfect example of how marriage being redefined by the Supreme Court actually then redefines parenthood. And it actually affects the family and the raising of children. Here is a child that it's possible, depending on how this is interpreted, that could be taken away from its rightful biological parents simply because five Supreme Court justices decided that they could interpret the law as they wished, that the law is simply something that they themselves make up, or that we as human beings make up for the good of our society, and there is no higher law, such as we talk about universal, based on commonalities that exist in a spiritual realm outside of this material world. And that's what's going on.
It's been the rejection of natural law,
right,
which is what was given to us in the universe and our creation,
exactly,
by our God, the Creator.
Exactly.
You're rejecting everything and relabeling it to the point people are so confused they don't know what to believe.
The Lesbian Law Center is demanding a gender-neutral definition of parenthood in the name of so-called fairness. So in the name of so-called fairness, we're destroying the concept of family that's been around for thousands and thousands of years. And it goes on here. It says, attaching mothers and fathers to their children and to one another is not only one purpose of marriage, it is the essential public purpose of a marriage. And notice that word, essential. And the fact is this is what rejecting universals is rejecting. And this is what modernists sneer at. They sneer at so-called essentials, and they call what we are saying here natural marriage and other natural things that we can abstract out of the real world and see that are, actually exist. They're sneering at this and calling this something that people just make up and something that should have no holding in our courts. It said, but according to our church teaching, every single human being has the right to know the identity of his or her parents. And it goes on here. It says, redefining marriage then redefines parenthood. And according to Judeo-Christian understanding of marriage, it's the best public policy in this fallen world to have what the Catholic Church defines as a real and a natural marriage. So the conclusion of the article is Obergefell needs to go the way of Roe, and the sooner the better. But this is important. What I wanted to be clear here, this is a concrete example of what changing a philosophy can do in the real world. And and that's why in talking with this friend, I was trying to point out that we need to understand the philosophical concept of what's going on as much as we need to understand trying to change it just by kindness and love. If we don't know what it exactly it is that we are trying to change, we will be working at cross purposes and we won't really be addressing the problem as it should be addressed. So stay with us. I'm going to take a break here and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about this in the next section. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Hi, this is Kathy and Ann from Catholic Spirit Radio. We are looking for folks who would love to volunteer with us during our fundraisers and various other station events and tasks throughout the year.
We really need volunteers in the DeKalb, Sycamore, Morris, Joliet, and Lincoln areas, as well as Bloomington Normal.
If you have a few extra hours or more a month, put them to use for the Lord.
We would love to add your name to our Catholic Spirit Radio volunteer list. Contact us at office@catholicspiritradio.org.
Wondering about your next step? Ashley was in school and pregnant when she reached out to the Pregnancy Resource Center. Would she be judged? Would she be accepted? What she found at LAPRC was a team of people who were committed to providing excellent care and compassionate support to those facing pregnancy decisions through authentic relationships that display grace, honor life, and foster community. If you or someone you know is in a situation like Ashley, or if you want to help support women and families in our community, you can find us at pregnancyresourcecenter.org.
Catholic Spirit Radio would like to recognize our matching donors for this year's successful Carathon. David Busson, John Carter of Jack Lewis Jewelers, Matt and Layla Busson, John P. Holt Builders, and two anonymous donors. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we've been talking about the critical theory and how it came into existence by a philosophical change in the Western world, especially a change that came about because of the lessening and watering down of Christianity in general and Catholicism, of course, in specific. It was Catholicism that built Western civilization, which was the basis for our laws and the basis of understanding the whole entire structure of Western civilization. And when you change the philosophy that Catholicism adopted and taught, you change the whole concept of Western civilization. And when you separate the church from the state completely, as our modern society has done, you remove the very foundation and basis for Western civilization, and we can see that philosophical change, how much it's having an effect in our regular society, how it's changing all of our institutions and actually making our society unlivable, unviable, and eventually, if it keeps on going in the direction it's going, it will collapse. You can't have something without the foundation that it was built on. Destroy that, and the whole structure above it collapses, and that's what's happening. And so I want to read a little bit from an article, how this whole thing affects our law. And it's, again, an article in the same magazine that I read from last week. It's Touchstone Magazine, and it's the March-April issue. And it's an article entitled, Does the Law Exist? And when we get away from the philosophy that our law was built on, our law, in effect, begins to disappear. The article says here, modernity has its blessings, one of which is greater freedom. But when modernity goes to the extreme of completely cutting itself off from classical and Judeo-Christian traditions out of which it arose, it produces truncated persons who claim a radical autonomy, believing only in historical progress, in horizontal rather than vertical transcendence, meaning that you no longer have the hierarchy that Christian civilization, Catholic civilization, brought to the West, the idea of God and then, you know, the angels and then on down to man and then on down to the lower animals. In other words, a hierarchy from top to bottom. All they believe in is sort of a horizontal hierarchy from past to present. And somehow or another, as we move from past to present, we automatically move on the right side of history and automatically move in a new and better direction. And this is not true at all. In fact, actually, if you listen to the modern philosophers in the universities, having rejected natural law and having rejected universals and having rejected the idea of God and a higher order of things, simply look at history as one damn thing after another. That's what you'll find them teaching. We just have one damn thing happening after another, and there's no relation. And when Christianity taught and still teaches, the church still teaches, that we are progressing from this world to God's world, and that we are processing. In fact, every time we go to church in a Catholic church, when we are processing to the east, and we are moving toward actually this world passing away and heaven coming down to replace it, and moving to a higher plane and a better world, all of that has been washed away by modernism. So we have this idea of simply...
Right, and the popes have warned against this for over 100 years.
Yes, they
have. They have battled since 1850s. They have battled about modernism and the dangers of believing in this and going this way. We have been warned and warned and warned, even Mary, our Blessed Mother, has warned us of these dangers. Yep. But man has gone on and is creating an environment that he can be the God. Everybody can be their own God. Well, if you can be your own God, how is your culture going to survive?
Yeah, people, exactly. It means that people no longer constrained by the creator-creature relationship or the norms inherent in natural in nature are now free to make their own rules to participate in the progress promised by modernity. And you can take a look and see some of that progress. We just had an example of it, possibility of children being removed from their natural parents simply because of a decision by five members of the Supreme Court concerning a tradition and understanding that has been in existence among humanity for thousands of years. But is this real freedom? Let us turn to someone who, unlike most of us, experienced modernity in one of its most awful manifestations, the Gulag, and emerged from it to warn us. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, in his Harvard commencement address of June 8, 1978, noted that since the Age of Enlightenment, we have seen the proclaimed and practiced autonomy of man from any higher form above him. And that has come about, again, because of the rejection of Aristotelian philosophy. And we need to understand that. But our autonomous, irreligious, humanistic consciousness, which made man, rather than God, the measurement of all things on earth, is a calamity. In the absence of a higher measure, Solzhenitsyn stressed, the basis of Western society has become legalistic. And isn't that exactly what is happening?
There's this, exactly.
In other words, a there's no such thing as a natural father and a natural mother of the child in the case I just talked about. Somehow or another, we can just make this up any way we want to by our courts and declare by ourselves, as if we're God, who the father of the child is, even if that person is not a man, and even if that person had nothing to do with the actual biological birth of that child.
Right. And we need to be very careful. The definitions that are being used, the definition of a man and a woman is being changed. A female is one who carries eggs, okay? That's the very basics of the modernism. And a male is one who carries sperm. Sounds like what we were taught in school, right? This is the definition of male and female. How has this gone so wrong?
The whole concept of a man is a universal. This whole concept, in other words, if you deny universal, you deny that there is such a thing as men by nature, that men are just creatures that happen to carry sperm, that then we just made up that name, men.
We'll just use it.
And classify them together, even though they're all different. And since all human beings, in effect, are interchangeable parts, according to modernity, and a woman can, in effect, take the place of a man just as well, because the whole idea of the term woman and the term man are just concepts and constructs that we make up. And we had this by someone who is going to be possibly on the Supreme Court, or at least not on the Supreme Court, but one of our justices who said she could not define what a woman was, for example. Of course, she would say the same thing about men. She could not define a man. That's just something that the law creates out of its own whole cloth.
And she would have to have sociologists, psychologists, biologists, genealogists, and go on down the line, all these experts, to say what a man and a woman were.
And ultimately,
and we better wake up. This is what's going on.
And ultimately, it would simply be decided legally and legalistically. And this is what the last article, too, last week meant when we talked about, the constant legalisms. Because you can't ever arrive at anything solid. You can't ever arrive at any actual, one solid truth. Everything depends on everything else. Everything is relative. And there's where relativity comes also. Once you reject Aristotelian philosophy, you introduce relativism, because everything on this earth is ephemeral. Everything in the material world is constantly in flux and changing. And because of that, nothing is permanent and so forth. So therefore, everything is relative. And that's where relativism, if you wonder why it is taking over our society and invading our law, that's also because we have rejected the idea of Aristotelian essentialism, Aristotelian commonality, that we can abstract out of the material world concepts that don't exist in it but are still real. It goes on. Law professors who invoke the law without believing in an ultimate lawgiver are like physicists who proclaim the orderliness of the physical universe without believing in an orderer. Law's Quandary is a book-length meditation on the question of whether the law exists. While not reaching any definitive conclusions, it very nicely illustrates the quandary and must lead even the skeptic to pursue further questions. In other words, we get stuck in a legal quandary when we don't have any higher law in which to match and base our lower laws on, our human laws on. So it goes on. It says, Aquinas has five kinds of law. Aquinas embedded the law in a rich ontological context by differentiating five kinds of law. The eternal law, which is the government of the whole community of the universe by divine reason. In other words, God's law that orders everything. And then the natural law, which is the rational creature's participation in the eternal law. In other words, the natural law that we look at here on earth is actually a participation in the divine law that's even over and above that actually creates the order that we see on our planet and that we as human beings can understand. We can take a look and see that even in the animal world, we can see that there are male and female and we can see biological progeny and taken care of by the mother and the father and so forth, we can see the divine law reflected in the actual world. And then there's the human positive laws, which are the laws that we as human beings make up conveniently. And some of those are convenient. For example, the speed limit on a street. It could be 25 miles an hour or 30 miles an hour. But the point is, even it is actually centered in the divine law, which holds that human beings are dignified creatures. They are made in the image of God. And so even a speed limit is designed to protect people from injury, because we hold people as having the worth to be protected from injury. So even a arbitrary speed limit that we can make up ourselves and decide that it could be 25 or it could be 30. But the whole point is that we are still actually putting our law, making our law, in effect, in the image of the divine law. It's designed to do what we consider is good because human beings are worthwhile. And when we refer to the law, we are referring to the natural law in a Thomistic sense that Thomas Aquinas talked about when he said that the natural law is reflected, you know, a reflection of the divine law. We can look at the way the earth operates, abstract out those things that make it operate that way, and understand that the whole system is orderly and based on a higher law than a natural law, which is actually the divine law which made up the universe.
And, you know, under the Nazi regime, under Hitler, he rejected the natural law. He rejected God. And what happened?
I'm glad you brought that up, Lynn. That's exactly right. In fact, actually, when we had the Nuremberg trials, in other words, after the World War II, when we saw what happened, you know, in the Holocaust, what the Nazis did to human beings, especially to the Jews, but also to many others, to a lot of people in other countries surrounding Germany. When we saw the horrors that happened there, when we went to try the people that were responsible for doing this kind of thing, for gassing Jews in ovens, shooting them, killing them, treating them like vermin, and making them live in horrible conditions, reduced the level of worse than any beast.
They're starved to death.
Yeah, starving them to death and other things. When we went to try these people, we had to try them not by our American regular positive law and not by the German positive law. In other words, under German law, these Nazis were not doing anything wrong. Germany had reduced these other people to non-persons by law. Their courts had reduced the certain peoples to non-persons, and therefore they could be treated as animals or even lower than animals. So we couldn't try them by those laws, and we couldn't even really try them by American positive law, because they certainly weren't under American law. They were under German law. It had to be agreed upon that the Nuremberg court would try these people under a higher law, that it would be try these people under the idea that men were made in the image of God. And if you didn't believe that, at least that under the natural law, or under what, you know, our founders would have called nature's God, these people had a dignity that had to be respected, and that law was known to everyone. It's known to all human beings, and that the Nazis had to know, simply by the fact that they too were human beings, that it was wrong to do these things, and we could therefore justly try them under the natural law, and that they were guilty by the natural law. And now here we are, a civilization built on the whole idea of divine law and natural law, rejecting it and being reduced to not even understanding what marriage is. This is what I'm pointing out is happens when you change philosophy, and when our universities began teaching from the Enlightenment, and especially from the 18th century, a philosophy other than the Aristotelian philosophy that Catholicism took considered something that actually was given by God, that actually improved upon nature. In other words, you know, grace doesn't reject nature, but grace perfects nature. And the idea of having something better in our own understanding than nature itself is the idea that by God's grace, nature can actually not be taken away, but perfected.
And right. And I'd like to make one other point. We have accepted these things to the point our culture is declining and almost destroyed. I want you to think about it this week when you watch television, as you know most people do, and I do too. But be aware of what you're watching. Jeopardy now has females talking about their female husbands and vice versa. All the comedies and stuff. Homosexuality is accepted. This has gotten people to think this is a normal thing. It never has been normal. So be careful. Be watchful. Be the guardian of your faith and your country.
And remember that when you reject the whole Catholic concept and the Aristotelian concept, you are rejecting the very idea of norms. You are rejecting the idea that we can find normality and norms in nature, that we can find them in a higher sphere than our own here on earth. And you are accepting the modern idea that we can simply make up whatever we want. And there's nothing else to judge it by except the human desire. So at any rate, there's some more to this. I'd like to even talk about a lot of examples that we find in history. Martin Luther King, for example, said that an unjust law is no law at all. And he was talking about natural law. He was talking about justice based on the very natural idea taught by Socrates, taught by Aristotle, taught by Paul, taught by Augustine, and taught by Aquinas. And that's just one example. There are many more. So we're going to have to stop here. We're going to say our prayer. Saint Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio